Oh, no, Adam.
Hey, Joe Manchin here, and I'm here to tell you to tune in to Taking It Down. Hey, it's The Working Life here on Taking It Down. We're here for you every Tuesday morning to help you think through or decide on some television, movies, music, maybe beyond. Today on the podcast, we're going to be discussing the new HBO show, Somebody Somewhere, as well as our thoughts on the most recent episode of The Book of Boba Fett, and brief comments on the movie The Last Duel.
Nope. I meant to text that earlier.
Please keep this part in.
You know, even the professionals like us don't get to everything all the time.
Hey, you're hearing them now. Joining me today are the regular customers. It's Adam Morrow and Donovan Reinwald. There they are. If you can't sort them out, let's just get an official hello. Adam?
Great to be back. I missed you guys last week.
Yeah, that's true. You were out. Natalie did a wonderful job. She's one of our co-hosts often.
I was honestly just happy to get the mic back. I figured I was probably permanently fired after that.
Have to wrestle it from her. And here's Donovan.
Great to be here.
You know, your week's just not the same if you don't start it with a Donovan mic lean in.
Does the week start on Sunday? Is that what you guys do?
Yeah, the week starts on Sunday. That's what my calendar says.
True. It's a calendar, yes. And then for me, I guess Monday morning is truly a start. It's the hottest thing in pop culture right now has very little to do with anything we cover. It's Wordle, right? That's the hottest thing in pop culture.
I love it.
Okay. I want to talk about it, honestly, just for a second.
Okay, let me Google that real fast.
Oh, you don't know?
No, what is Wordle? I'm
Donovan!
One of my New Year's resolutions is to be more honest about things that I don't know.
Are you a fucking liar? Is that what you've been lying to me this whole time?
So, every time I come on here and I'm like, yeah, I watched that show, and I'm just...
This is like when Donovan and I had a college class together, and I did not read King Lear, and he did, and I just kind of drafted off of his paper.
I was so mad because Adam's paper, you know, Adam wrote his own paper. Based off of class discussions, I wrote my own paper, and Adam's paper got the better grade, which is still...
Doesn't that... Yeah, I get the infuriation.
Still aggravating.
I don't think it helped when I put it on the refrigerator of the apartment that we shared.
Good move, man. So every now and again, I forget that you guys were college roommates.
Yeah.
All right, so Wordle is this... It's they give you a word in six guesses, and it's always a five-letter word.
Oh, I think I have heard of this.
And then everyone sharing their results on Twitter. I don't understand how that became such a important part of it. Like I don't.
It's always a five-letter word.
Yes.
So it can always. Never. It can never be fart.
No, but it can be penis.
Can be farts.
It's
okay, farts. That's all right.
Or farty.
It's rarely plural, right?
Yeah, not a lot of. I've heard it said that it will never be plural. I don't know if that's true.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, it's a waste of a guess if you guess a plural word. I always start with penis. Rather just get that out of the way.
Does it work?
I don't think it exists. Well, I don't know if penis. Honestly, I've never guessed penis.
Well, it eliminates it at least. So I guess that
eliminates I and E.
Oh, and it. Yeah. Oh, by the way, it shows you through colors. Like green means that's the right letter in the right spot, and then yellow means that's the right letter. It's just in a different spot. So, you get six tries. It's very fun.
It's fun.
Oh, and they only do one a day. That's also the great part. That to me is the perfect part about it is that you're not sitting on your phone, doing it. For an hour, you get one a day, and I bet a lot of people, a lot of our listeners have figured out their time of day, they're going to do it then, and then they do whatever. Mine's always just during a downtime in the morning.
Yeah, I know people who wake up and immediately do it to kind of start their day. I got to have a little more brain power.
For sure, me too.
I'm in two group texts that share their results. So I guess I do have that impulse to... You said you don't understand why people put it on Twitter. I do get a little bit of the appeal of showing, especially if you did good.
It's really weird because I've yet to see anyone spoil the word, which would be very easy to do on Twitter or Facebook or something. No one's done that yet, and I know a lot of people who are intellectual and would play the game and are also assholes. But I suppose sharing your results takes that away, or
you get a little hit.
You get a little hit, nonetheless, even though... And here's the thing. So I'm in a group text with Adam and our friend Adam here on the show, and our friend Jeff, who we mentioned sometimes. And even when we talk about the Wordle thing, we won't say the word, even though we're like, all three of us have done that day's word. It's like, well, I don't know, it's almost taboo.
Just in case.
Just in case, like, you didn't get the same word or something. I don't know.
It's like when we talk about the challenge, and we're kind of, nobody can remember who's watched it when, and so you're saying things in the most careful way possible.
Yeah. So where did this, have you done any research on it, Adam? You know where it come from, what started it, or?
It's a British fella, right, who made it, it's a self-perpetuating program. It generates the words for his wife to entertain her.
Oh, it's Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney made it.
Oh, yeah,
and
I remember
it's
him.
Really sad because they keep telling her that Linda can't play the game. It's really awful, actually.
Sad.
But it took me a while to figure out that it's on a website. It's not an app.
Like, oh, that's another thing. Yeah.
I felt like an old, because I typed in Wordle into the App Store and downloaded a very janky program. That is
virused up your phone really good.
So if I'm not responding to texts anymore, that's why. You have to go to this website. And I think it's the one a day.
It's the one a day. And it's the website. There's no app involved. I think that's also novel and awesome.
No ads. You do it, and it says share,
yeah,
and then it gives you this very concise thing that you can copy into Twitter or into a text or whatever.
I was going to say the fun thing is you can also manipulate what it looks like, so you can like make it look like you get it on the first guess every time, and I'm so tempted to do that with people, just to be a butthole.
In these two group texts, if we play forever... Then, which we won't. We'll. I hope that we're still doing this over the summer. I think it does have the potential for staying power.
We'll see.
Because of the once a day thing.
We'll see.
I'm playing right now.
I haven't played today, so don't tell me. It reminds me a bit of that. Y'all remember that tile sliding game where you had to like combine like 2 and 2 and 4 and 4 and slowly get up to like 2048 or something was the number. Do you remember this? It was like 2014-ish.
I do not. And the thing with Wordle is, the reason why I'm wanting to talk about it is, I think this may be the first phenom sort of game, app, anything that I've been a part of. I avoid that shit like the plague. How this one wrote me in, I do not know. And so I don't know what you're talking about.
That tile game was fun because it was an actual thinking game. You know, like when Angry Birds was huge, you're kind of like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, I get this. But these are actually like... You know, it's fun that a lot of people are playing a logic-based language game. That's a good time.
Have you missed any?
Yeah, I missed one.
I think I've missed two.
It was very frustrating. I mean, like, deeply frustrating.
It was rather early. It might have been the third time I'd tried it, and I was being really, really goofy. And then I was like, I realized, no, I kind of want to try this and take it seriously. No excuses, though. Whatever. If you guys will let me indulge, I'm going to do a new segment at the beginning of every week where I recognize in really vague terms one thing I found great about Euphoria.
I'm going to catch up by the time that this season is over, and so I will join you in vagueness.
I'm of the unofficial opinion that this is the most popular show on TV right now, especially with that big subsection of people that TV really wants every week, and that's the 18 to close, very close, 18 to 25 demo. And even I would go so far as to say 16 to 25. Everybody I talk to who really love the show are mostly like young, and they're so into it. But anyway, this will keep the spoilers out of the conversation and allow hopefully for me to just get this off my chest, because I always feel like I have something to say about this show. So this week, for the first time on TV that I know of, Euphoria addressed one of the most annoying things, not the most annoying thing, but one of the most annoying things about these few years of COVID, and that's how everyone's become a self-help book online, and they proffer these platitudes on how to feel better without listening to your actual problem.
Uh-huh.
So, first time I think I've seen that on TV, and I appreciated that.
I feel called out, Plain.
You do not post any platitudes online anywhere. You don't even post online, much less platitudes. That's my vague thing I liked about Euphoria this past week. Now, that was from episode 2 of season 2, so we're always a week behind because we record on Sunday and then there's an episode on Sunday.
Are they engaging with the pandemic? Is the pandemic happening in the show?
No.
Okay.
No.
I read a good, or I should say skim. They may have mentioned Euphoria, so I'll say skimmed in case I'm giving my reading habit away. New York Times piece about how television has engaged with pandemic.
It's always sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
They dealt with it. Dennis got COVID and insisted he didn't have it and was just coughing. He's like, God damn it, I don't have COVID.
I mean, Curb has...
A little bit.
But their reality is post-COVID, right?
Yeah.
More than... Yeah. So it's interesting what everybody has chosen to do with it.
Well, while we're on the topic of HBO shows, there is a new one out from the Duplass brothers. It's called Somebody Somewhere, and I think I sold it to you two, just from the description I saw, was it's a coming-of-middle-age story. Just that alone is what got me. I don't know about you two, but that's me. A coming-of-middle-age story is right where... that's scratching me where I itch. Do you have any thoughts or previous relations with the Duplass brothers?
Relations?
I mean, you don't have to divulge everything.
You know, I've not ever been a huge fan of their work, just with one thing or the other.
Yeah, me either. They always seemed too indie street cred type for me.
And just never interesting enough.
Mm-hmm. That's
usually... It was, they always seem kind of middle of the road.
Mm-hmm. It might help if we call out maybe even some of their work, and I need a reminder too. What are you thinking of specifically? The One I Love?
That was it. Didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, they, and I think like they turned me off even further back than that. And I'm having trouble remembering when or where. It was with HBO, and they...
With the TV show they did?
Yeah, what was it?
Ballers.
They did.
Yeah, Ballers is good.
I came into today's show thinking you guys would have had some interest in their work or have seen it, especially you, Donovan. I just feel like they would have produced something you might have liked.
I've liked one movie they did, Jeff Who Lives at Home. That was fine. I saw that at the Bama Theater way back in the day.
Okay, so that might be one of the ones I was trying to think of too.
And it was, you know, it was funny that they always seem to go for like understated, right? Like that's their mm-hmm. their cred.
They're very like the much.
The Coens of understated.
You wanted to say shtick pretty bad there. Understated is their shtick.
It is their shtick.
Well, it kind of is. I get some people don't like them. I was not too certain that I did. Anyway, they've got Somebody Somewhere. What'd you guys think about the first episode of this? All we have is one episode under our belt, so.
I wish we had a couple more episodes, honestly.
Yeah, me too.
I was left feeling like I needed a little bit more, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I guess that's good, right?
You're right.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah, well, let's start there. What about it did you like?
I was pleasantly surprised, honestly. When we initially talked about it and I watched the trailer, I'm not sure that at least the first episode is what the trailer led me to believe that it would be.
Agreed.
It seemed, I guess we can get in, it's only one episode, so yeah, we can get into spoilery kind of stuff here.
For sure.
But, you know, it made it out to be in the trailer that this woman has moved back home to a small town in Kansas. We find out it's Manhattan, Kansas, so not truly tiny, not in the North Alabama enclaves that we live in, Blaine, those kind of terms, but a small town still, to take care of her sister, who has since passed away. Mm-hmm. And there's some estrangement in the family going on and blah, 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 and she appears to be a fish out of water in the town, and that kind of seems like it. And I thought, I don't know that I have the energy for this much of a bummer of a show. It looked good, but like a, you know, this is going to be a downer. But then watching the first episode, I found it to be way more life-affirming and uplifting
mm-hmm.
than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it described as an investigation of adult friendship. I don't know how long that'll go.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it's pretty, you know, to me, the first episode is really more about people who were a little off kilter from their small town building community inside of that without sacrificing their identity of still being proud of being from Kansas, you know, proud of where they, you know, because, I mean, they all seem like they could have left if they wanted to, but here they are, very self-aware about their position. I don't know. I'm interested in shows that pull off that level of complexity that quickly, you know, because those are kind of like big ideas.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point that you brought up, Adam, and I had not considered, but that component to the outsider narrative where maybe you're an outsider, but you're still part of your environment, and you want to be part of your larger environment too. And I definitely, now that you've brought that up, I definitely see that. Even with the joke, right? Like the guy, the drag king, who's doing his jokes, and he's got two places in the world: Manhattan. Also, what I had for breakfast this morning, right? Like,
yeah,
it's very, it's outsider, but it's very local, and it's part of that universe. I mean, part of their world.
If you spend a lot of time in the South, and you, or us, if you feel a bit, if you vote different than everybody else, or you believe differently, or even just spend your time differently, care about different things than the people around you. I mean, I know we devote a large chunk of time every week in the fall to Alabama football, but we kind of run out of things to talk about with the general populace after that pretty often. You know, these are familiar ideas and struggles, and it's, you can be a part of a community and be proud of it without falling lockstep into... You know, like I thought her sister who comes down into the basement in that one scene and really goes after her. So she was such a good, you only get one flavor of her. She's angry and she seems to be closed-minded and like the people who still live in the same town that they grew up in without a lot of growth. Yet she was kind of a complex character still. She wasn't just like a caricature of that person. I would assume for episode one, I assume she's going to keep growing, but... So you see that tension, but then you also see the beauty of that community at the end. So I thought it was great.
You know, the music and the visuals of this show, between scenes, really, really make me want to like it. I don't know if I've seen enough to say that I do like it. And the reason why the visuals and the score, it just captures, really simply, the act of aging in a small town and the loneliness that that can entail. And in a very kind of Midwestern, I assume, way as well. That got me. Really hard to explain what it's doing in between scenes. It's just setting exactly where it is and what kind of story it's going to tell just with those B-roll shots.
Yeah, it was really good at establishing the mood of the story. Where there's so many shots that just feel like they're driving by... empty fields or kind of older houses, and that feels exactly right.
Yeah, Mayor of Easttown did this too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of similarities in the B-roll footage there and what they're doing with music overlaid. That do you guys appreciate the lack of hand-holding these sorts of shows that they do not do in establishing their relationships with other characters?
I love it.
Yeah, that's always interesting to me.
I love it, but it's also interesting that they didn't spend... You didn't have to know her to kind of triangulate her relationship with this coworker who she discovers, oh shit, we were in high school and had, like, not just, like, in the same building, but, like, we had a lot of classes together and the same interests and all this kind of...
Yeah.
And you see his reaction to that, so to where you learn a lot about both of them without having to... spend a lot of time with either one. I thought it was really clever how they taught us about place and character without having to do the hand-holding stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's still a very internal kind of show. I thought Mayor of Easttown was like that. As much of a ensemble cast as it was, you still kind of had to dig a little bit. Whereas this is putting things in the open. It's just doing so while the story immediately gets cooking.
Yeah, it's very show, don't tell, right? Like, let the relationships develop through what the characters are doing and how mm-hmm. they're interacting with each other, which I also appreciate. It feels like it kind of respects you enough that you don't need that setup. Mm-hmm.
It totally does.
It respects that you're going to be able to figure out what's going on just by being with the characters.
Yeah, and the outsider in the town that they're using is the outsider culture of gay and queer, I guess you'd say. That's what they were, the main character, that's her culture. She's a gay lady, and then she runs across this high school friend whom she'd obviously forgotten about, or they become friends because she wasn't that close to him. And he too is gay, is from what I understand. And he sort of brings her into, hey, although we're gay, we've got this underground, you know, thing going at a emptied out church that they've given me the keys to when they're not using
it. In a mall.
In a strip mall. All right, yeah. Or just no, a mall. Mall. Not even strip.
Yeah, she goes through the whole the mall atrium, which is a good bit of the. You already described the sense of place is very, mm-hmm. very well done. And even in those establishing shots of her, you know, you see her in her brain's going, I'm supposed to be going to a church, which I don't want to go to. And I'm in this mall that's empty and it's 10 o'clock at night. What is going, where am I?
And I just came out of the swimming pool.
Yeah. Yeah. Bathing suit soaking through the t-shirt.
Yeah. How much of Jasper Mall did you think of?
Heavy vibes.
So much. So I've got really high hopes that this show continues to dig into other people's perception of you versus your perception of you.
Mm.
I thought that it captured that in episode one as well as any show in its first episode. Don't know if I liked it, but I want to like it, so that's real promising. The first episode was really broad in that it wasn't about a particular narrative in Sam, the main character's life. And maybe it won't be. Maybe it'll be one of those shows where it's just not about a narrative in Samantha's life. I'll finish with this question. Did her performance of Don't Give Up have the gravitas for you that it was supposed to have?
I thought it did.
Okay, yeah. It kind of did for me, too, a little bit.
It's funny because Natalie is famously allergic to karaoke. Feels like deep embarrassment when other people put themselves out there like that. I mean, not just for herself, but like anybody cannot be in the room when it happens. And I think there was enough of that to make her deeply uncomfortable there. So it was funny. Our living room had two very different reactions to to that scene. And as you know, there's an NPR piece on the show that says, was it too on the nose? Were the lyrics too on the nose for the show? And I mean, because it's in an environment where a guy is throwing choir practice once a week and engages with his community through song and remembers her joy as a singer and all this stuff. Like, of course he would pick that song. It feels like it fits for him to try to say something to her that way. And yeah, I found it kind of moving.
The only danger I saw was that it was too soon. Like, that's the end of episode one. Should that have been an episode five kind of ending where you get to know them and you've lived with them for a little while? But it kind of
sort of works. Definitely shows where the whole arc is her finding this community, you know?
That's true, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do now that she immediately finds the community, what that looks like.
Yeah.
Did you feel like they were poking you in the chest with the whole what are you going to do with your life kind of thing?
Who, me?
Like, personally?
Yeah. No, both of you.
They were challenging me?
There was a lot of... Well, there was one particular moment where I felt like... And I'm forgetting which one it was. Shame on me. But I... Was it... kind of like, you know, you're this certain age. Why aren't you doing this and that? Was it her sister berating her?
Her sister was giving a lot of shit. Yeah. In that basement scene.
Okay. Yeah, I might want to bring this back up in a few more weeks. But there you go. If you've watched it, if you're a listener and you've watched it, or if you're thinking about watching it, that, you know, there's not much to spoil other than just a very loose plot. So there you go. Let's take our break, and on the other side we're going to talk about the Book of Boba Fett. Hey, it's our break, which is just a chance to ask that you vote for Joe Manchin and that you subscribe to this podcast if you don't already. Also, if you want to create in conjunction with the Alabama Take, be it podcaster, writing, or anything you have in mind, reach out to us on any social media site or just email us at thealabamatake@gmail.com. This podcast, Taking It Down, releases every Tuesday, but if you go and find the Alabama Take on our social media accounts, you can keep up with everything related, including Taking It Down. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Follow us on any of those and let us know who you are. Back to today's show. We're going to get into a longer conversation about Disney, a Disney Plus show. Did you have a chance or happen to see the trailer for their upcoming March show, Moon Knight, also an MCU show?
I missed it.
I also have missed it.
Oh, okay. So that's the one coming in late March, starring Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke as the protagonist and antagonist, respectively.
Well, that's a promising setup.
That's good. That, Lord. Yeah. I guess when you just have all the money in the world to spend,
yeah,
you can get just whoever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Oscar Isaac is one of my favorite actors working.
Do you think it's going to be a spinoff of Marriage? Did the Marriage Story?
Scenes from a Marriage?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
Scenes from a Marriage.
Jessica Chastain stars as his estranged wife. Yeah.
There's some superhero stuff thrown in there, but it's really about the relationship.
That would be fantastic, man. I would watch that. probably going to watch this one. I think we're oversaturated with MCU stuff and DC comic stuff, but you know, damn, when you get Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke,
now,
who's to say no?
Is Moon Knight a character you had any kind of connection with?
No, none.
Okay, same here. I've never cracked a page of one of those comics.
His suit at the end of the trailer does look comics accurate, which is something they avoid from time to time. But it looked like a straight-up comic book thing while still looking like something Oscar Isaac would star in. Anyway, that'll be interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about it in late March. So, yeah, next up we got the most recent chapter of the Book of Boba Fett titled The Gathering Storm. You're already laughing?
I think it needs a new title, something more anticlimactic.
Such as?
I don't know.
Such as The Sitting Around?
The Sitting Around. That would be pretty good.
Well, they did some things. I don't know. Let's get into it.
The easily solved problem.
Yeah. If nothing else, we appreciate that Disney Plus releases on Wednesdays as it fits our podcast schedule and our recording schedule perfectly. So we do get to talk about this one before a new one comes out. So, Donovan, you didn't like this episode, right? No?
I'd say I wasn't crazy about it.
Interesting.
What was going... I'm still very unclear as to what Boba Fett wants to do.
Well, that's the thing. I assumed he wanted the Hutt position, the former Jabba the Hutt crime boss thing, so he could avenge his Tusken dead pals, but he's already done that. Now what does he want to do? Just settle down?
Is he going to do any crime? That he seems to...
Crime? I want to do crime.
It seems to be...
I got news for you guys. Boba Fett is a cop.
He is a cop.
Holy shit. He is a capitalist-busting cop. Who knew? Yeah.
But I'm still unclear. I guess they're setting up this fight with the, what is it, the syndicate? But other than that, I'm
the
not
fish
really
guys,
sure what's
the
going
pike?
On. Is that who they are?
The pike? I couldn't something?
Remember. I think you're right.
They look like fish. I'm just happy that we had no more teenage biker gang from...
Oh, you mean the mods?
The mods.
Which, did they call them that last episode? Because in my
yeah.
In my head I was like, oh, they're doing a stupid mod joke with their... stupid bikes.
I know that y'all talked about it last week, but that was the worst bike chase I think I've ever seen on film.
Involving the worst bikers you've ever seen on film.
Yeah. It's completely uninterested.
Oh, yeah. It's horrible.
It was horrible. And speaking of bikers, you know, they set up, like, he's going to avenge his fallen Tusken friends. And then he gets his gunship back and blows up all the bikers, and that seems to be the end of that story.
Done in a minute.
Which,
although it was pretty awesome. Like, when he got the ship, I did think, you know, why doesn't he just fly that around and find those assholes and blow them to smithereens?
And he did.
And showing them flying the bikes and then his ship slowly appear behind them, that was the shot of the show.
credit where credit's due, that is easily the most theatrical thing I've seen on this show, is the Sarlacc pit coming back to life, shocking you, him being in the ship, dropping that, I forget the name of the bomb, but it's got that nice theatrical rattle to it. That was great.
That was a good time.
Yeah, that was cool. Fun. That really was.
Again, Natalie was asking why is his ship shaped like it is, which is a question that has plagued us all
since childhood,
right? Yeah, why does he? Well, because it's fun to watch him climb around inside the ship before it takes off,
yeah, and absolutely. Then it makes sense, and then it flips,
and
around.
It looks cool. It flips around.
Isn't there a bit of realism, because when you get in an actual earthbound spaceship, you have to sit like that?
It's a good point. But when they're like leaning over the pit, and she has to take her seatbelt off and falls forward into the, like, this is why.
No, it was fun.
It was great.
That was a great time. That chunk in the middle was fantastic. And I do think we finally got an episode that had a bit of a theme, which is the challenge of becoming more civilized. It was kind of there. It's there if you want it. Adam, how is the Max Rebo Band, is that the only one on the planet? How hard's that gig?
Just the best.
They're just the best. They play everywhere.
I would assume. I mean, that's probably the premier spot to have the gig, right?
Yeah. Do you think they're a cover band? Are they playing covers?
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't know if y'all discussed this last week, because this is my buddy Jamie, who was in Specklebird with me and runs a studio in town, is a...
Hey, Jamie.
Borderline closet Star Wars fanatic.
And we need him on the show.
He seems to attempt to let others have their conversations without, like, you know, raising his finger into the air and saying, well, actually, you know, he doesn't want to be that guy.
Like a Simpsons character.
If you ask him about anybody, he knows the entire story. Like, has read the novels, has engaged with the universe in this profound way. He claims that the name of the style of music that they're playing is jizz.
I'm sorry, what?
J-I-Z-Z. Canonically, that is how that style of music is spelled.
There's also something else called jizz, and...
That probably didn't survive the transition to Disney, right? Like, that's from expanded universe.
But I gotta think that's your number one band leader in the on Tatooine. I think he's kind of doing, like, the L.A. to Las Vegas to New York circuit. Like, he's just playing three cities over and over again.
I get that.
Have to wonder if they ever get off Tatooine, if they really hit the big shows.
Why would he? I bet he's making a killing. I mean, he's playing for mobsters, and they're giving him a ton of money.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's what, you know, Tatooine, I was under the impression, was just, like, dirt poor. But
oh, nice.
But apparently, there's a killing to be... Yeah, there's a killing to be made on Tatooine. There's tons of sin. I thought, like, Jabba's the only one here because, you know, he controls everything, and there's not that much going on.
No, but they've got spice a la Dune.
It's just also the outpost for a lot of shady stuff, right?
Like, that's the point.
Yeah. Lots going in. It's a Costanza import-export business kind of thing.
You'd think it's the only territory, the only planet in the Outer Rim territories. I tell you what.
They do use Tatooine way too much these days. It's time to get off that planet. But
are we ever going to find out what happened when it used to have oceans? There's this
I hope that's a show.
There's this whole fascinating thing. How did the Tusken Raiders survive?
Yeah.
How did the plants and animals evolve? You know, there could be something kind of cool there.
Yeah.
I love when Boba said that he grew up on a planet surrounded by water, and everybody in the room is like, ugh. just kind of glaze over. And we don't want to hear about it.
Hey, did we like the droids this week? We had some new droids.
And you believe it? Okay, so here's the thing. Little trivia. Little Jamie Seago trivia. Yeah. The rabbit droid apparently appears in Clone Wars. So that little... It's called a rabbit droid. The cook droid has a name. Don't ask me what. But it apparently appeared in Attack of the Clones as a scold to R2-D2 at some point in that movie. You can track it down.
So, now I have a reason to watch Attack of the Clones.
Yes. With the swinging knives and...
I feel like there are two kinds of Star Wars droids. There's the kind that seem like they're well made, and the kind that seem really clunky. And we were definitely on the clunkier side of things.
You know what? That was one of my biggest complaints about this episode, were the droids. I felt like this episode was a lot better than previous installments, and that was a big slip, was the goofiness of the small rabbit droid. It was just too cutesy goofy for...
I don't understand why that scene was in there.
Not me either. It wrecked the tone that they were shooting for, because this episode delivered on that brutality that I think is needed, or at least promised, with this sort of show. Notably, the arm being ripped off by Black Kristan.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think, keeping in mind that it is a kid's show, or at least kid adjacent.
It is, but it's much less brutal than the original.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
I mean, you got Luke's hand being chopped off in the original trilogy. Things today that are made for kids are much more carefully constructed not to offend than what we dealt with, and that might be a good or a bad thing, but here we are as adults and we want a little bit more of arms being ripped off.
I mean, I think you can have fun, like R2-D2 checks the box of being fun, yet also not lame. Like, why is he chasing a rabbit droid around the room?
Exactly,
that made no sense.
They tried too hard with that kind of cutesy stuff. Definitely in this most recent trilogy, which was a train wreck.
Woof.
And lots of speculation that the whole hiring muscle at the end is a hint to the Mandalorian, them going to recruit him. And I think that was his theme song being played.
They sort of played
end.
His theme, right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that. I read about it later, so I'm not the type to pick up on those kinds of hints, but everybody else did.
That was what I understood, but that was one of those, like, don't play with John, don't play with me, don't make me, you know, don't take the thing that I like and make it bad, just don't give it to me at all.
You talking about The Mandalorian?
Yeah.
You a big fan?
You know, I'd say I was a pretty big fan of The Mandalorian. Yeah.
I thought it's okay, mostly. It's pretty good. I think it's better than Boba Fett. It's
better than Boba Fett.
I mean, I've seen turds on the floor that are better than Boba Fett.
I enjoyed the, you know,
on the
and
floor?
I don't,
on the floor.
I don't get it, because you've got Robert Rodriguez, who did an absolutely fantastic episode of The Mandalorian with Boba Fett in it, where they kind of reintroduce him.
Mm-hmm.
And the magic just doesn't seem to be here for this one. And even I was even able to put up with Fennec Shand a little bit better in The Mandalorian. And now they're together just because they have to be, because they were in The Mandalorian together. You know,
Well, it's missing two things. It's missing motive for him, and it's missing danger from him or towards him.
I agree.
But you're right. You want to talk about his, what are we calling her, his lieutenant?
I'd say, yeah, she's kind of his right-hand man at this point.
She was better this week, don't you think?
She had a little bit more to do this week.
Right, right.
They still have her, you know, she was best when she had to play, I thought she was best in the ship, right, when she's trying to unbuckle to get the bomb to go off.
Yeah, yeah.
She's good, yeah.
But, and then she actually got to show off some cool gadgets that she had and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But they over rely on her just being stoic.
Exactly. That's her, and that's the actress's shtick. I wish, and I bet she can do a lot more, but, you know, she's got to be given it. Pretty pumped about Kristan, the Wookiee, being recruited as part of his team now. That's so much better than teenage mods. What was it Lennon called them? John Lennon called them teddy boys.
It was a Vespa chase. They ride Vespas. They're not really riding bikes.
Yeah.
God, yeah. Burned. Any more thoughts on the Book of Boba Fett?
I guess I'll keep watching.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still watching it for whatever reason.
Well, it is entertaining.
So,
it could be a lot more, but it's entertaining
it could be,
at least.
It could be a lot more. So he's healed now.
Uh-huh.
So what does that mean? Does that mean we're done with the flashbacks?
Good question.
I hope not. He seems to enjoy the soaking experience. I bet he gets back in that tube. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Also, how long was he in? He said something to being in the Sarlacc for years.
No, that was confusing wording. He said the armor has been down there for years.
Oh, the armor's been. How long was he in the desert?
I guess he was with them probably a couple years.
Okay. I was very confused about the timeline there.
I was proud of Tamira Morrison's acting on this episode. Like, it took him a few episodes to get into the groove, I think. And I doubted his acting in the first episode, and I think it was a little bit better here. A little bit more emotive without overdoing anything.
Yeah.
He's just got to have more to do.
Same thing, right? He needs motive, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. They sort of hinted at that, where he's like, you know, we're smarter than them. How many times have you done a job that didn't need doing or whatever? But it doesn't seem to connect with what he's actually doing in the show in any kind of tangible way.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of nodding vaguely that he's going to be a crime boss because he thinks he could be.
Because he doesn't want to be a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Why are you wanting the job of Baba Hutt? Because I want to settle down. Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. Now what are you going to do with it?
This is his 401k.
Can't blame him. I think he needs to... He learned the Tuscan ways really quick and their style of fighting. I'm thinking he could learn a guitar or something and join that Max Rebo band just as easily. That's probably where the money is.
Probably so.
So that's our show. We will... How many episodes of this will there be?
Seven episodes.
Seven.
So we're well over halfway through.
Yep.
Okay. But three episodes to do something. They have gone into the 50-minute territory with an episode. We'll see. We'll see. That brings us to the end of our show, though. And thanks for our listeners. Give us a share online or tell a friend. And we'll be back next Tuesday morning, bright and early. And we'll talk to you then.